session number 20375, Reel 7.
Built by Reel 7.
First time I came across it was, we went down into the PX, it was myself, a New Zealander, Bumble Brown, an Australian, and a lad from the Royal Army Medical Corps. And we went in, up to the counter, got our beer, and we looked round and we found this table with just two other chaps sitting at the far end of it. So we went up and said, can we sit? Yes. And we sat down and we're at one end of the table. And I suppose it was a table for eight or ten people. And we sat there and all of a sudden you get that feeling that something is not right. And the hum of conversation had sort of subsided. And suddenly these two Americans walked over and said, excuse me, yeah, you can't sit there. We thought, hello, we are going to have trouble again. At first we thought it's because we were Allied troops as opposed to American troops, and we thought, this is a joint services canteen, anybody can sit where we like. So we said, why? So he said, you're not allowed to sit with them guys. And we looked down the other end of the table, why? They're on our side, but they're coloured. And they were two Negroes. And we said, oh, we're not interfering with them, mate. You know, nothing to do with us. So he said, you're not allowed to sit at the same table. So I said, well, I'm saying it quietly. Bummer turned around and said, don't bring your bleeding troubles to us, mate. If you don't want to sit on this table, go back and sit down. He said, but I'm staying here and I'm drinking my beer. He said, now let's not have any bother. He said, because I've only just got in, I'm settling down. And this yank walked away. And then two very big American sergeants came over and said, leave that table. So we said, no. Now it had become a matter of principle. So we said, no. These chaps have said we can join him, we're staying here. And it's not the right thing to do. We don't sit with coloureds. I said, well, you ain't sitting with coloureds, we are. And as I say, Bomber Brown was a big lad. And he said, look, Yank, he said, do us a favour. Before the fight starts. And I said, what fight? Said, this one. And he just sort of came up out of the chair. And when he did unwrap himself, he was a big boy. And he hit him. And the most God almighty fight you have ever seen started. I was put under the table. He just grabbed me by the scruff of the neck and shoved me. He said, get under there and stay there. And I thought, why? And then when the table immediately fell over, I suddenly realised why, I was too little. And the next thing was, all hell broke loose. We had MPs of every colour, shape and size came in, Canadians, Australians, Americans. And they have a wonderful way of sorting out riots. The Americans come in with a stick about 3 foot, 3 foot 6. And the minute they grabbed hold of an American head, they hit it and slung it through the door. And our blokes were being grabbed in the usual manner, one arm up the back and frog marched outside. By which time now, Bomber has grabbed me and the other squaddy that was with us and pushed us into a corner, and we're now sitting at the table as though nothing to do with us. And when it was all settled down and calmed down, and they said, what started it? No idea. Somebody said something about blokes sitting with coloured blokes or something. We didn't know what it was. Anyway, they closed it. They closed the bar for the evening. And we went off. And we feasted on the joys of sin, I suppose, is the only way to joyfully describe it. But we never got back to the rest camp until the morning we were due to fly back out.
But in this fight, who was on each side? Was there just Bomber Brown on the
No, it was side? It immediately split into the Allied troops against the Americans. I would bet that 2/3 of the people that was involved didn't know what it was about. It was just that somebody was punching some American, or some American was punching one of us, and that was enough to start anything, especially after you had a few beers.
And this was in Turkey?
Mm.
And it was a special place set aside for servicemen, was it?
Yeah. I can't remember the name of it. It was the... No, it's gone. The Red Cross something servicemen's club.
And was Bomber Brown in your unit?
No, Bomber Brown was the Australian squaddie that was with the Royal Victorian Rifles. He was a squaddie that I met on the hillside when I was... He was on sentry go with his rifle slung across his back. And
he was the one from Northern Territories?
Yeah, the Northern Territories. Character.
Any other brawls you were in no, Japan?
No, we were very good after that. We were, in fact, we were very loving from that day on for the rest of the 10 days, I think is the expression.
Did your service in Korea leave any after effect with you in any way?
I suppose I'm not quite sure where you're getting at. I know I don't want to go again. I don't want to be involved in that sort of war again. I've seen campaigns since that were never anywhere near. As I say, we had the brief skirmish with the Arabs in Aden, which was virtually nothing because it was hit and run and we never saw them, apart from the kerfuffle at Crater when the natives were put down by Mad Mick. But and the same with Malaya. We went on a foray where they used, I think, just about every soldier in Malaya, and we were going to do a sweep along the Malay-Thai border, and we had I was in the Air Corps then, 16 recce flight. In fact, we flew the border for 5 days. We combed that jungle, and I don't know how true it is, but I certainly know that at the end of it, God knows how many million pounds have spent, but we only caught one guaranteed Chinese bandit. So, you know, that wasn't a war.
What type of plane were you flying in?
Austin's.
And what was your job in the plane?
I wasn't as such. I was ground crew, but I did quite a bit of observer work.
What did that consist of?
Basically, sitting with a pilot and talking. We used to get away with murder in 16 flight. We got to Aden, and they wanted, I transferred from tanks to clerical work just after we, in fact, while I was on the boat. They wanted a pay clerk because the lad that was doing the pay clerk got appendicitis or whatever and ended up in sick bay. And I volunteered basically because I discovered that clerks didn't do guard duties and whatever, so I thought that sounds like a job for me, so I'll do that. And I carried on as a pay clerk for some while. Then the pay corps took over all of regiment and pay in every regiment, and I moved over to squadron clerk.
Is this the Army Air Corps?
No. Then when we went to Aden, I was sitting in the orderly room, and the word went out that they were going to form 16 recce fight, Queen's Royal Irish Hussars. And somebody said that it was going to be with the Army Air Corps. So we rushed to form a queue. And they said, right, you can report to Captain Wright, who had been with the Air Corps, and he'd just rejoined the regiment solely to do this job of forming a flight. And we went up country to a little, the regiment was in Aden, and we went up country to a base called Bir Fukun, which was how they can tell, I don't know, because it was just another bit of sand. But there was a Nissen hut and a hangar. And we got up there, and there was nothing there, apart from a field telephone linking the Nissen hut to the hangar. No furniture, no equipment, nothing. So he and I pulled up in this Land Rover and got out. He said, yeah, we can make something of this. So I said, but there's nothing here. Oh, he said, well, there's going to be more of us. It's not just you and me. So I said, oh. He said, so we'll see what we can sort. He said, go down to Base HQ and tell them that you are forming 16 flight and see what we can get. So I said, well, what are you doing? He said, well, I'm going back to the mess. I said, well, we've only got one vehicle. Ah, right. We'll go back via Little Aden and drop me off at the mess. Then you can go down to HQ. So I thought, well, that's fair. So turn up at Aden, Marla, and I walked in and I said, Lance Corporal Guy, 16 recce flight. Yeah. I said, I've got to get a requisition for the equipment to form the flight. Shuffling up papers. Don't know anything about this. Well, definitely on the cards. I still got a CO screaming his head off. Oh, he said, well, can you leave it with us for a week or two? I shouldn't think so. So he said, well, go down the canteen, he says, and I'll phone round and see if anybody knows anything that's going on. And I'm sat there for about 2 hours, and suddenly this major walked in and said, 16 flight. So I said, yes, sir. He said, you're late. I said, I've been here for 2 hours. He said, I mean, you're a month late. I said, well, we only got told yesterday. He said, well, all of your equipment is in Nairobi. Pardon? He said, the Army Air Corps headquarters is in Nairobi. I said, oh, all right. I'll go back and tell him. He said, oh, good. So I got back and climbed back, found Mick, and I said, all your gear's over in Nairobi, Mick. And he says, I'd heard about this. He says, I wonder why my dispatch order tells me that I should be in Nairobi. So I said, what are we going to do? He said, well, you're going to stay here and look after the camp. He says, and I'm going to fly to Nairobi and see if I can round anything up. And I ain't having this. I said, there's nothing here. I can't stay here. He said, well, all right, stay down at the camp. He said, but don't get involved with the regiment. He said, because we're nothing to do with him. And I swear he had a fortnight's holiday.
Which regiment was that? The Queen's Royal Irish Hussars.
Yeah. We now, with the Queen's Royal Irish Hussars, we now, we've been amalgamated. But as I say, a fortnight, suddenly things began to happen. Army trucks turned up with boxes and crates and things. And we began to find furniture when we unpacked it and that sort of thing. And we began to sort of, and then suddenly, a transit truck came in, and there was a Sergeant Major Remy, a Staff Sergeant Remy, and lots of little Remy airframe and engine fitters. So we now had the nucleus of a ground crew.
Which year is this?
1962. And then 8 Queen's Royal Irish Hussars turned up, who had also been seconded, volunteered, or whatever, to 16th Flight. We now had a barracks divided into two, other ranks and officers, which didn't last very long when they discovered that it was only a 10-minute run between the base officers' mess and us. The officers all flooded back to the base HQ, and we stayed on the camp. And there we were. We had crates of spares for aeroplanes. We had all the equipment we needed. The only thing we didn't have was aeroplanes, which wasn't bad, because it didn't mean we had a lot to do. Then Mick came one morning and he said, I'm turning up tomorrow with 4 young officers and 4 aeroplanes. So I said, oh, that's nice. So he said, make sure everything's ready for when we touch down. So I said, any chance of telling us what frequency you're going to be on. Oh, that's a point. He says, I don't know yet. He said, but rest assured, before I leave, I will make sure you have got everything you need for getting your touchdowns. Thanks very much. And then the next morning, there were four little dots floating about. I said, he's here. What makes you think so? I said, because that's the only reason we're going to have four flies floating about in a space that look as though they're lost. And I've got a feeling they're going to be us. And he came down. And these four osters came out of the sky down onto this desert track, which was laughingly called a runway, and they trundled up and stopped. And his Mike Wright was a character, I suppose, is the only way you can describe him. Because the first thing he did was, still in his flying kit, was walk into the office and said, here is that radio frequency that I promised you before I left yesterday afternoon. Thanks very much, Mick. Not a lot of good now, though, you're here. Well, yes, I suppose I am. I've got to get these chaps squared away. It's, where's the Sergeant Major? So, I said, he's probably in the mess. Because we were now getting sorted, tents. Anyway, he says, okay, don't you worry, I'll get him. He says, because I'm going over to round up the chaps. And these other three little pilots come along and sort of introduce, hello, 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 handing over their files and documents. And he suddenly around and said, have you noticed anything while we've been gone? I said, no, not really. He said, well, the hangar's missing. I said, pardon? The distance between the Nissen hut and the hangar was, I suppose, a 2 mile drive across the desert. Off in the distance. And nobody had been down there because there was nothing to look at. But apparently the Arabs had come sometime during it and taken the whole of this and that. I mean, it was only one of them wire and mesh and corrugated tin, but they'd taken a lot. So we had to go back and explain that we'd lost the hangar. Now, how true this is, I don't know. But there was a system in the army which they used to call cross-referencing. And if you had two of one thing and zero of another, and you should have had one of each, as long as the titles sounded similar, you could cross-reference them. And somebody told me later that Mike Wright had done a deal with the RQMS for a bay hanger and a coat hanger, and he'd exchange them over on the nominal roll and written this hanger off and got a new one posted in. And I, you know, knowing Mike Wright, it's the sort of thing that he could have done. But then you think to yourself, well, could he?
So this was 16 recce fights in the of the Army Air Corps.
Yeah.
And it was 1962 when it was formed in Aden.
No, correction on that. 16 flight was formed in 1961.
And
we were there for a year before we were posted to Malaya.
And so
again, as an independent flight, we were in fact 16 recce flight Queen's Royal Irish Hussars, but we were detached from the regiment down country in Kluang, while the regiment was up country in Ypres, and we only came together when they did the purge along the Thai border, Malay Thai border, with the Thai forces and the UN forces.
And you think that date might have been what?
I'm sure that was between May and June. And it was only a 1964. 1963. 63, 64. Going back to Korea, I look at the events that have happened since then and the television coverage, because we're now in the television age and we get stories of post-traumatic stress and how hard things are and how difficult soldiers find the life is today. I'm just trying to find out where post-traumatic stress came from, because we never had it. Nobody ever gave us medicine or tablets or pills or whatever for post-traumatic stress. Maybe we fought different wars. But from what I can gather from the Gulf and the Falklands, they're set up and their bits and pieces that prepared them to go to war was exactly the same as mine. I was taken from a cushy English billet, stuck on a boat, although now they fly, and landed in a totally alien environment. And you got on with it. And people shot at you. And you shot at people. And you came out the other end. And as long as you hadn't been physically wounded, then the mental stress didn't come into it. There was no post-traumatic stress as such. There was no night of turning in your bed and thinking, oh, what have I done? There was no thinking, did I lose anything? I said right at the very beginning, the only thing I lost was my innocence. But that is, I suppose, part of growing up in the 20th century.